Hello, I'm Jason Young, the general manager at WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. My job is to help keep things running at the station. However, there are many more important people involved in helping to define WCBN as a university and community mainstay. Today, I'm joined by Cameron Belfner, a web developer for the University of Michigan. Now a graduate of the university, Cameron has stuck around and helped guide several WCBN students while continuing to DJ Cecine Pa Freeform every Monday.
College radio especially has the freedom, the opportunity, the responsibility to be that source of novelty, newness, and just to change it up for people, to really, you know, to be the voice and the curatorial voice, choosing the music that we think is good, as diverse as we are, and introducing it to somebody who wants something that they've never heard before.
Cameron, where are you from?
I'm from Ann Arbor.
Okay, and so born and raised?
Nope.
No?
No. Okay, yeah, so I'm Cameron Bothner. Yeah. I was born in Pittsburgh, but when we were three, I moved to Ann Arbor. So raised, certainly, not born.
Okay.
Small technicality on that front is the only thing. I went to King Elementary, Clegg Middle School, and Huron High School. And Huron High School is where my English teacher, senior year, was a fellow by the name of Jim Dwyer, who regular listeners to this station will recall is the host of Robot Pasta. And at the end of the year, he said one of the coolest things he did in school was college radio. And so wherever you go, check it out. But, you know, it was a part of a big, like, find a club because there's more than just school thing, which I appreciate. And it just so happened I was not leaving Ann Arbor, and that the radio station he was talking about was the one that I would go on to check out, as it were, and find pretty cool.
And was that your first introduction to WCBN?
So I was in the same grade as his daughter, and she showed up. I mean, again, regular. This is going to be all about Jim Dwyer. That is sort of a family program where, you know, they would bring their kids in sometimes too. So Lily Dwyer told me all about this radio show she had, and I did not believe her, and I couldn't find it on the dial, and so I had never listened. But when it came up in class, that, you know, in senior year, I was like, oh yeah, that's probably what she was talking about.
But okay, so Lily Dwyer was, I guess, your intro to WCBN.
My real intro to WCBN though was Rob Goldie.
Who's Rob Goldie?
Rob Goldie was the music director when I showed up here.
Okay.
Just randomly on Sunday night or whatever. You know, I don't know. He was around, and I quickly got into music review in the way that many people do, as an accessible, approachable, and regular way to get my volunteer hours that are so nicely detailed in the requirements for becoming a DJ here.
Okay.
And music review was the only thing I did with WCBN for my first semester. And it was hilarious and fun and a really good time.
Okay.
Because in large part, just everybody around here is great. You know, especially Rob Goldie, who was running those meetings. And that was what made me feel immediately like, this is a place where I can be comfortable and where I can stretch out a little bit. And it's a, you know, it's a good place to keep coming back to, is kind of how I felt.
So then I'm going to take it a few steps back then, try to figure out, what was your first introduction in general to radio?
That's a silly question.
Did you grow up listening in the car with your parents?
I don't know, who doesn't, right? I mean, radio is sort of background noise to our culture. Like, it is just there radiating through us, like, culturally and physically.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I'm only, what, 24 at this point, so radio, I think, was past its peak, right? We also had, you know, the CD in the car or whatever, and then eventually my dad had an iPod that he would plug in, so we didn't listen probably. It wasn't like, you know, I've heard stories from older folks about, you know, sitting down by the radio just like all summer long waiting for something good to come on, and I did not have that experience ever. It was very much like, I mean, that was sort of the like cultural nostalgia that, you know, even though I didn't have personally, I still felt like, oh, the romantic thing about there's somebody there choosing the music for me. So when I did start listening to CBN that summer after senior year, before I came to the U of M, that's when I sort of, you know, kind of like fell in love with that idea of like, oh, this is, you know, music I don't have to choose myself, but it's also not shuffle. Like, it is intentional. And, you know, when the people would come on and the weird things, the little skits or sketches or things that people kind of just do when they're having a good time, you know, the little stories they tell. Or, you know, I had like an NPR moment. I remember one, you know, sort of very early after I'd started listening, after I set my car, you know, preset to CBN that summer before I started here, where whatever it was, I think it was in here, they had mic'd up the piano or something, and I don't know who it was, I have no way of knowing, but somebody was interviewing somebody else, and that person was answering all the questions in the form of, like, improvised songs on the piano. I have no idea what it was, but it was so weird. It was like, you know, the kind of comedy song that you hear, like, comedians do when they're prepared for it, but it was just like improvised piano and like weird, like, ramblings to music.
It's like, are there any other weird or odd things that, like, have happened in your time here that stand out?
You mean this week? There are lots and lots of weird and odd things that happen here all the time, so much so that it's kind of become normal. I don't know.
So there's always just something going on down there in the basement.
It's a cool place.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a cool place.
So then, to your knowledge, what is the story of WCBN? Kind of like a historical background to the station.
I mean, how far back do you want me to go? It's all hearsay. But let's see. Way, way, way back in the beginning of time, it seems like, we didn't broadcast on AM or FM or anything, but through the power lines of the dormitories. So there'd be a studio in the basement, sort of probably where the practice rooms are sometimes, you know. And they would sort of plug into the electrical system of the building. It was called carrier current, and using the same kind of AM techniques, they would use the building's wiring as an antenna or as a way of broadcasting. And so you could only listen if you were living in the dorm, but it was sort of a little, like, micro-scale media thing.
Okay.
For students. And that was when it was the campus broadcasting network, right? So there were three dorms, and they would trade back and forth and send each other signals over the telephone wires so that you could hear, you know, South Quad broadcasting until 8, and then it would be East Quad or something like that. And then when it started to be, I mean, you know, radio as a profession was a thing at that point, and so it seemed like, even though this university's focus is, like, research, that there still can be room. It's often filled by student organizations, fill that space for the practical skills, the trade kinds of things. And I think, you know, at that point, students petitioned for, can we get an actual broadcasting license from the FCC? Can we actually broadcast to the general public? Because that'll just be all the better for, you know, practice for the students. That's when they started selling cigarette ads. That's a thing we used to actually have on the air, because it was pre-regulation about nonprofit stations advertising, and also, like, cigarettes were normal. So we would have little Lucky Strike jingles or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that's kind of how the station, you know, it was very commercial at that point, because radio was the commercial center of, like, advertising. Yeah, well, that meant radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we stopped being that when it stopped being like that, I think, over the years. Well, you know, and then in the, what was it, 90s or something, there was some kind of college radio thing going on. CMJ was important among the indies. I don't know. It was that 90s alternative moment in music history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the second big crest, right? So that's when it kind of maybe was a little weirder. Although, I mean, I don't imagine it was ever not weird for Ann Arbor, the same way that, like, you know, Calix and Berkeley is never not going to be kind of, like, we're a product of where we're from, right? It's that sort of terroir media, like local production like that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to be the one for encyclopedic history of the station, but...
No, that was really good insight, though. Yeah.
Some things.
I think one thing I do want to kind of follow up on, you mentioned student involvement in the station. Obviously, it's a student station, being a part of the university. How have you, at least in your time here, seen students kind of take the reins in the station in different ways? Because really, it's kind of at the whim of the students in terms of making sure that certain things are continuing on, but also that they are pushing the envelope in the odd ways that are unique to WCBN.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the really special things about CBN that there really is no leadership but the students, and even that leadership is only sort of, I mean, it's there. You're technically right, the general manager who is a supervisor of all of the other heads of exec staff or whatever. Like on paper, we have this hierarchical thing, but in practice, it has always been, in my sense, is that it's always been very much more like, you know, if you show up and have an idea and are willing to do it, then that can happen, right? Like there's mm-hmm. nothing in between the idea and being able to do it. There's no red tape, as it were, right? And that's a real contrast from some other places around here. And I think that's like uniquely enabled by how, on some level, passé radio is as a career, right? Like I don't think anybody down here, except for maybe some of the most serious people in our sports department, are really imagining getting a career in this afterwards, right? Like it's broadcasting for the fun of it, like the same way that community theater is, you know. Mm-hmm. And as a result, like because of our special like way of, because of our special relationship with, you know, business and practical knowledge and whatever, and the emphasis on just creativity down here, as well as because of our sort of, you know, blessing and a curse relationship with the university, where we don't get that much attention all the time, certainly not in terms of real funding. It means that the student leadership is basically all there is, right? So for me, compared to a certain other media organization on campus that I shan't name, you know, here it was very easy to get involved. It was very easy to make a mark. It was really easy to have an idea and see it through. And that's pretty much exactly what I did, right? Like I showed up and I was part of the music review thing. And then, like, not even a year later, James Griffiths got the opportunity to go study abroad in China for a little bit and dropped Fundraiser in my lap as a thing like, oh, here, this is yours now because you're around, right? And it's always sort of that. It's if you're around and available, then you have the opportunity to really make something of it, right? To make your own experience. And so that's kind of what I did. And the way that I wanted to do Fundraiser was not, or the way that I wanted to dedicate my energy, right, was not maybe the way that somebody else would have done it. I mean, you see this year, Jerry is really killing it on American-made premium items, right? He put in a lot of work to go and find places where we could get American-made items, union-made items, at the price point that we needed to still actually get a donation, you know, to still fund the station. And that was a lot of work. My focus was on overhauling the fundraiser database from the old Microsoft Access thing that we had. I just threw that away and made my own. Right. And I just wrote the whole thing originally in PHP, and then I tore that one down and rewrote it in Ruby on Rails. And that was, for me, the way that I wanted to spend my free time, right? Like mm-hmm. just as a hobby, you know, to do something interesting. But it also had the benefit of being like really meaningful and important. And when I was done writing the thing, you know, I could now like put it in use and make, I think that year we raised like $35,000 with it. Right? Or something like that. And that's an outrageous opportunity, just sort of because there was no reason not to, right? And that was something I cared about. So that's the kind of student leadership you get around here. And it does mean that it's a halting progress sometimes, you know? Like, as one person has an idea, we can move in that direction really rapidly. And then when that person either loses energy, has something else come up and you know, needs to focus on school or something, or graduates, right, then maybe that is no longer an area that we're progressing super quickly. But it means that, like, for the students who come down here and become part of leadership, it can really be, I mean, like, you know, everybody talks about the sort of build your own curriculum kind of future of universities or whatever. Everybody talks about, like, the mix and match a la carte education, especially with practical things, you know, on the internet, MOOCs and little modules or whatever. I think that, you know, maybe that'll come to pass, but what we've seen so far have been kind of, I don't know, not very, very successful attempts, or not very innovative, right? Sort of a new coat of paint on the old way. I think CBN is it's really very different from, I don't know, it really does reach that goal, right, of being like a completely personalized educational opportunity that also is like very practical, also connects explicitly to, you know, something that people care about, right? Where you're the thing that you work on and you learn a lot doing also then matters a lot and you know, makes like, yeah, I don't know. Those are some things.
Yeah, those sound like some pretty good things. I mean, again, even in terms of like, this might sound kind of corny, but it sounds like the structure of the station itself, not just musically, but in the way that things are done, are kind of freeform, and that lends each person a bit of creativity in how the station tends to operate.
Well, and I won't try to paper over the bad things that are the other side of the coin of that very same thing, right? If I didn't have the financial stability to have not had to work a job while I was in school, then I probably would not have been able to make the opportunity that I did for myself. So I recognize that this kind of, you know, very open-ended thing is not very, you know, in turn, not always super equitable, right? That entire groups of people might be, you know, relatively unable to take advantage of that. And so I think that, like, I don't want to say that it has to, that the only way that we can do this is because the university isn't paying attention to us and there's no funding. And so we, you know, like, it is that sort of blessing and the curse where the fact that there's no funding to hire a professional or to, you know, there's no university staff member who sits down here and administrates, or there's really not like the resources to acquire a commercial solution to most of our problems, you know, that does allow us, but it, you know, and force us to do things ourselves, and, you know, only when we're really able to dedicate the energy or the time, right, can we do that. And so I think that, you know, it's the other side of the coin to be aware of. I don't know, just to say that maybe there would be a way that we could be supported so that, you know, students who actually, you know, might otherwise have to take care of their own personal finances instead of, you know, hanging out down here. I mean, like, that's, you know, I'm never going to fault somebody for doing that. And there are, I can imagine, ways of funding this station and allowing students to still have the freedom to do it themselves as opposed to purchasing commercial solutions and or hiring professionals and foreclosing on their own learning opportunities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's the challenges of the way we've got it as well.
Right. So, yeah, again, there's the, what is it, there's certainly that issue of both sides there.
It's the same kind of thing as unpaid internships, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Right, like
everyone's volunteering, essentially.
Everybody's volunteering, right?
Yeah.
And so we're only going to attract the kind of people who can afford to volunteer for their education, right? And that's, mm-hmm. and that is a challenge that as a society, right, I'm not sure we've got a good solution for, but seems to me like it ought to be, you know, something like, I don't know, you know,
mm-hmm.
There are, you can imagine maybe some possibilities, but then there are challenges with all of them.
Yeah. Well, one thing I did want to follow up on was you mentioned funding for WCBN. As of now, how does WCBN typically receive funding? I also know you kind of tossed in the fundraiser there as well.
Yeah, so since I was the development director during my time here, I've got my finger on the pulse of CBN's fundraising situation pretty well. The University of Michigan does not charge us rent, and that is a form of in-kind support, right? They do not charge us for our electricity bill. They do charge us for our phone bill. But they don't charge us for the limited but appreciated janitorial services that we get, right? So there are these forms of in-kind support that the university gives us. And in addition to that, because the regents own the license and there is a federal regulation that every radio station have at least an engineer on call or you know, around, right, available. The university supports Jim, our halftime station engineer, and pays his salary and benefits and doesn't take that out of our budget. So some forms of in-kind support notwithstanding, the station gets no operating funds from anybody but our listeners. I'll say that again. That kind of in-kind support notwithstanding, the station gets no operating funds from anybody but our listeners. And they donate every year in the annual fundraiser, right? Like an on-air pledge drive, the way that NPR stations do it, but not annoying, you know? Like a fun thing, like an enjoyable time. And we have historically raised between $38,000 and $42,000-ish annually, which does a pretty good job of paying for our you know, general expenses, allowing us to do things like bring bands in from out of town and put on concerts, as well as for the past too many freaking years, honestly, we've been paying into the project of moving the transmitter and you know, upping that by 10x or something, which should be completed. We broadcast from the top of Weiser Hall on the University of Michigan's central campus, and we broadcast at 300 watts, and that means that we can be just barely heard at the Detroit airport if you are not like in between the traffic lights in the worst possible way, right? Just barely over the noise. And it would be nice to be heard more consistently outside of Ann Arbor's boundaries. And for 8 years, maybe a long time now, we've been consistently working to move the transmitter and upgrade it to 2,000 watts, which would do a really great job of making our dreams come true, essentially, as far as reach and as far as fidelity, even at real distances. And we've had some really interesting setbacks along the way. It has been, I mean, a real part of my education here was about like how massive corporations, I include the University of Michigan in this, how massive corporations are governed and how bureaucracies work, because that's been just really fascinating. Anyway, we are now actually no longer held back by anything except for the amount of time work takes to be done, but that work is being done, and nobody else is going to say no. And then we can put the new transmitter at its new site on North Campus near Baxter Road. At there's a nice standalone broadcasting tower, which would be, you know, not too close to anything that there'd be interference problems, and we would be free to upgrade and you know, turn it up all the way. And that should be done. Can I say April? I don't know. Jim told me April, but Jim's told me a lot of different dates.
Who's Jim?
Our general engineer is named Jim Campbell.
All right. And how is college radio, at least through what you've experienced at WCBN, changing, if at all?
So I think for a long time, people liked radio because it was the only way to hear music that you didn't physically possess, right? But with the rise of streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music, anybody can listen to any song at any time, and so it's sort of switched purposes for people. I feel like, you know, in this world of plenty, right, where you can listen to any song that you want, sometimes all you want is for somebody to choose what I want to hear right now. Like, just play me something that is interesting and good, and don't make me think too much about it, right? And I think, like, all of the shuffle and programmed playlists and you know, algorithm radio stations are an attempt to get back what we did have with radio and when you didn't have every single song at your fingertips. But none of them are going to quite do it if you're the kind of person who likes things you don't know you like, right? If that's what you want out of music, if you want to have your horizons broadened, then the algorithm playlists, I mean, just the way they work, right? It's a feedback loop, essentially, right? It plays you more music like the music that you have said you liked. It plays you more songs that people who listen to the same music that you listen to also listen to, right? And if you're the kind of person who wants something that you have never heard before, you're not going to get it out of something that is built to play you music more like the music you've heard before. And so that's where CBN has, and radio more broadly, college radio especially, has the freedom, the opportunity, the responsibility to be that source of novelty, newness, and just to change it up for people, to really, you know, to be the voice and the curatorial voice, choosing the music that we think is good, as diverse as we are, and introducing it to somebody who wants something that they've never heard before. Right. And so that's sort of a different responsibility than radio used to have. Right. We don't have to be concerned so much with making sure that we play every now and then a song that somebody knows they like. Right. I mean, we don't have to be the place that, that people who like the music that they like, but don't want to have to choose it right now. We don't have to serve that group of people because they're well served by the algorithms, right? We can be much more niche. We can focus on the group of people who are committed to broadening their horizons and who aren't served very well by any of the algorithmic stations, right? Any of the shuffles of the world, because they need something that they've never heard of before, right? So yeah, that's kind of the way that it's changing.
I think you might have a very good perspective on this next question. One, I think having kind of been around WCBN, not just as a student, but now also as an employee of the university, I think you've got multiple angles to this. Where do you see WCBN going from here? Do you think it will change?
I would be a fool to say that CBN wouldn't change, right? To ever presume that it would stay the same would be just, you know, totally silly. Of course, WCBN will change, especially because it, you know, every single group of students who come in are able, as I did, to leave their mark. So we have reached a point of stability with our relationship to the university. Right, we have now an actual advisor from under the Dean of Student Life who comes to our board of directors meetings and pays attention to us and helps us when we've got like a question that only the administration can answer. And that point of stability was a long time coming, and I think it means that maybe we don't need, you know, maybe every single group of students doesn't need to relearn how the university system works. I don't think that means that they won't have to, you know, learn just as much. I think it'll give the station freedom to pursue a much more diverse set of activities, right? Like if we don't have to jump through a ton of hoops to get an expense reimbursed, then how many more things are we going to be able to do whatever group of students comes in here is going to have their own priorities, is going to have their own interests, and we're better equipped than ever to enable them to really stretch out and make something cool of it. I don't know exactly how it will change, right? I think that I think on some level it's, I don't know if it's stupid to say that it's obvious to everybody, but like I do feel like CBN attracts the kind of people who appreciate that it's small, who appreciate that it is, pretty agile. You know, and I think that, and also maybe the University of Michigan attracts the kind of people who well, you know, nobody who's at CBN is, you know, has the luxury of considering CBN their first job at the university, right? Everybody here is taking very hard classes and has ambitions of whatever it is that they want to do. And I think that kind of means that everybody is coming to CBN with the attitude that, cool, this is my release. This is my playground. This is my, you know, my happy place where I can not have to really care about the practicalities of, you know, is this choice right for, I mean, is it going to look good on a resume or something, is not a question I think people are asking when they come to CBN, right? I don't think anybody comes to CBN saying, oh, cool, I'll be able to put on my resume that I was a such and such. I mean, maybe central student government attracts more of that kind of person. Maybe the Michigan Daily attracts more of that kind of person. I feel like here, students who come to CBN are excited by the playground that it offers. And so the parts of the station that matter, I feel like, won't change so much, even if the actual activities and the actual processes do change. Of course they'll change.
So then my last question, and you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but looking for the full package right now. So what has WCBN meant to you in your time here?
I'm going to get all sentimental. I don't know how possibly to sum that up. I mean, WCBN is definitely the best thing that I did at the University of Michigan. It's, you know, the only, like, the friends who I am still in touch with, I made at CBN. So there's that. I also think that CBN is responsible for the, I don't know, it's thanks to my time at CBN that I have the sort of path that I have right now in life. I feel like I'm really happy with the balance that I've struck with between computer programming, software engineering, and like humanities and the arts and whatever. That's a balance that I'm really happy with that. I don't know if it matters, but since I was a little kid, I was really into computers, and all of my parents' friends would, you know, have told me since that they always imagined that I would be a computer programmer or whatever when I grew up, right? That's like, I was teaching myself how to write code from, you know, third grade on. And then when I was in high school, I started to participate a little bit more in some sort of programmery kinds of clubs and engineering kinds of clubs, and found the community there really, I didn't like it very much, right? Like the sort of, the ego thing about engineering and computer science, right, where it's always a competition about who's got the better idea and whose solution is, you know, more performant or whatever. I mean, from that perspective to the fact that it was like, you know, a lot of white bros making stupid jokes at the expense of other people, right? I mean, it didn't ever feel like a comfortable community to me. From that initial, like, toe in the water moment in high school. And so I kind of made the very radical decision in my own head that I don't like engineers. I don't want to work with engineers. I don't want to be an engineer. And I came to the university, you know, did not apply to the engineering school and did not take any computer science classes at any point. I was like, I'm going to study linguistics and I'm going to take modern art history, and I'm going to study the history of the city and classes about, whatever, just crazy stuff. And I mean, crazy, not crazy, but just humanities, sort of arts and humanities kinds of things, or social science kinds of things. I mean, linguistics is science for sure, but it's not engineering by any stretch. And that's kind of probably what I would have, that would have led me into some kind of career in that kind of space. But I still really liked writing code. I still really liked, programming, and CBN gave me a really interesting space to pursue those things outside of the community that I had, that was not super welcoming and that I didn't like all that much, and find that, I actually still really do care about this as a thing to do, right? As a way to spend my time. And it gave me a way of saying, like, okay, that does not mean that I have to be a CS major or participate in any of that, right? Like, I don't know exactly how to articulate it, because I'm still really early in my career, but I did end up getting a job through the radio station on some level, right, with somebody I met here. And I'm writing code now for the university, building learning tools for students in the School of Environment and Sustainability. And, it's a great thing that there are niches where software development can, be relevant, but that aren't like a super unwelcoming bro-y culture. And that, like, you can use these skills that I have and that I'm passionate about learning and improving. I can use them for purposes that I also care about, as opposed to just to make more money, And that was something that I personally attribute that to this environment at CBN. I don't know how to generalize that at all.
There's one other thing I want to ask. I would be kicking myself if I forgot to ask you this. Your dad's also on the WCBN staff. In some ways it's odd, in some ways, for WCBN it's totally not, but the fact that your dad was able to also kind of hop on the air after you got involved.
He asked me really, like, He was sort of tail between his legs. Are you sure that it would be okay? And I was like, no, you should totally come down here. And I mean, it's not like he used to write for several newspapers as a music reviewer. He has a long history of, I don't know how to sum that up. My dad worked for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and the Ann Arbor News, writing about concerts, and so he's got a lot of history with the music industry, and so I thought that, like, I always appreciate having conversations with him about music history, and that's probably, so he's got, like, at least something, I think other people might enjoy learning from him, but more than that, it was just, like, CBN is a really, like, open and welcoming place to all sorts of different people. Certainly, like, the University of Michigan student experience is paramount, by rights or whatever. But also, it was basically like, I could tell he really wanted to, even though he never really asked. And then I said, why don't you try this out? And he said, are you sure? And it, like, it took, like, a year and a half or something, before he finally believed me when I said, no, you won't be, like, stepping on my toes at all. He was saying, I can wait until you graduate. I mean, little did any of us know at that time that graduation would not be the end of my involvement at CBN, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It certainly makes for a, it certainly makes for good dinner table conversation when I go back there for something, at least good dinner table conversation for the two of us. I think everybody mm-hmm. else in the family gets a little bit like, shut up about the radio station already.
All right. Thanks for joining me, Cameron.
Yeah, cool. Right. I appreciate the, yeah, it was fun.
This podcast was recorded and produced in the WCBN studios in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library.